You are tuned in to Community Radio, WPVMLP, Asheville, North Carolina, 103.7, streaming online, WPVMFM.org, the voice of Asheville, heard all over the world.
Here's your Radio Asheville weather report. Partly sunny today, the high near 64. Wind gusts near 25 miles per hour, with a slight chance of showers later this afternoon. Showers likely with a chance of thunderstorms tonight. Some could be severe. Near steady temperatures around 63, with wind gusts approaching 40 miles per hour. More showers possible on Monday. Maybe some snowflakes mixing in. I'm Johnny Cottle on Radio Asheville 103.7.
When systems fail, where do you turn for truth and resilience? Welcome to the Resilience Realm with host Dawn Westmoreland, a syndicated radio talk show host, retired Air Force veteran, author, and resilience advocate. Each week, Dawn brings powerful voices, attorneys, mental health experts, veterans, and leaders sharing courage, boundaries, and real-world resilience strategies. Dawn broadcasts on the Pacifica Network and WPVM-FM LP 103.7 Radio Asheville. This isn't just a show. It's a movement for courage, ethics, and justice. Tune in Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. If it's your first time, so delighted to have you. I have Julie Campbell, the Confidence Whisperer, with me today. Hello, Julie. How are you?
Hi, Dawn. It's lovely to be talking with you today.
And our listeners are probably wondering, where do you hail from? What city are you in?
So I am in New Jersey, just right outside of New York City.
That must be very active and very busy up there.
It is. It takes us 30 minutes to get into New York City on the train. It's why a lot of people want to live in this area. It's very dense, but very exciting, with all kinds of different folks from lots of different walks of life.
Yeah. Well, we're delighted to have you on the air today for the first time. And I love the fact that we're going to have 74 degrees today as springtime enters. So, Julie, how did you become the Confidence Whisperer? Before we even get into the subject, what is the story behind the Confidence Whisperer?
Dawn, I believe that everyone can learn to speak and command a room. So what I did was I took my off-Broadway skills and I created Center Stage Connections, which is my business, where I help others learn to stop shrinking and start speaking in their clear, genuine voice. And it's why anyone from leaders to students gave me the name The Confidence Whisperer. It actually started with a little bit of a teaser from one of my college kids who needed a boost. He called me and he needed a boost for a big speaking engagement he was headed into late at night/early in the morning. And I talked to him and kind of talked him through it. And he was fabulous. And I said, just got to believe that you got your heart and your head in the right place and you're going to be fabulous. And he took a big breath and he said, Mom, you give me a lot of confidence. You could call yourself the Confidence Whisperer. And I said, all right, well, I'm going to do that then.
That's great. You know, I've been a coach since 2014 through IPEC. And one thing I've noticed, Julie, is that a lot of women out there are wanting more confidence. I'm sure there's men, but I've worked with a lot of women. Why is that you think more women want confidence?
Well, I think we just have we're still working through that as a society and a world. I think that a lot of us men and women, we can all be hard on ourselves, but I found that for women, and I know for myself, there are a lot of expectations on how we're supposed to be, what we're supposed to achieve, work, life, somewhere in between. And there's a lot of messaging out there in general about what the ideal is. I think that we can internalize that and have it work not so well for ourselves when we're kind of taking those external messages to put on for ourselves. What's something interesting that I've learned through my work is that, and to your point, what you've said there, is that it doesn't really matter where you are in your career, that women face moments where we really do doubt ourselves, even in spite of the fact that we're very capable. I'll tell you a quick story about someone that I worked with for a Fortune 5 company, senior level. And she reached out to me over social media. And what she said to me was, I have a fabulous opportunity. I'm doing great in my career. I have a team that is fabulous. And I have an opportunity to lead a very visible all hands meeting for my corporation. It will be live, broadcast live. So it had two parts. She was going to be in the room, and it was also going to be filtered out there to thousands of people all over the world. And she said, I'm absolutely terrified and I'm ready to throw up and I can't say no. Can you help me?
Ugh.
So we had a conversation and we talked about what was getting in the way. For a full disclosure here, what I say is the work that I do is not therapy, but it is therapeutic, because I have methodologies that I use to help people kind of work through that self-doubt and that those old narratives that get in our way that kind of hold us back. And we worked together over the course of 2 months to get her sharp and ready for this fabulous engagement. And we worked through some of that, but we also worked on her getting really clear about her content, because you know that a lot of our confidence, our lack of confidence, starts to happen when we're not super clear about what we're going to say. So we got clear on all of those things. And the end of that story is that she was told from multiple leaders that this was one of the best all hands they had heard in 10 years.
Fabulous. I hope she gets a testimonial. We love success stories like that. Well, I'm curious, can we go back in time, your time, your personal time, and what you're willing to share? What made you get into this kind of work, Julie? I mean, there's usually something that happens to a person and they're like, well, they can either go south because maybe it was something bad, mm-hmm. or they may go north. You know what I'm talking about? They might want to achieve. What happened or what occurrences happened to get you to where you're at today, the work you're doing?
Yeah, so thanks for asking me that and for the opportunity to talk about that. I'll go a little deep here pretty quickly with your listeners, because I know that this is a lot about resilience, and we've had an opportunity to have a conversation. I'll give a little bit of a content warning that I will talk about some sensitive material. I grew up with domestic violence, and this may be difficult for some listeners to hear. So do what you need to do to take care of yourself. I completely respect that, and it's something that I still do for myself. I'll tell you a story that kind of encapsulates kind of what I went through, but also how it informs what I do today. I think it will be pretty clear. When I was about 10 years old, it was an early Saturday morning, and my dad called myself and my brothers into my parents' bedroom. They'd been out for a cocktail party the night before, a business meeting, soiree with a lot of people. And we came into our parents' bedroom. My mom was lying in the middle of her king-size bed. My brother and I were asked to stand with our backs against the wall. And when I looked at my mom, I noticed that she was still wearing the dress she was in the night before. Her eyes were battered and bruised. There looked to be like dried blood caked in her nose, and her nose was very clearly out of joint. There was also blood still on her dress. My mom looked like a child in that giant bed. And I wanted to reach out to her, but we couldn't reach her. My dad then told us that they had been in an accident the evening coming home from their engagement they had been at. And my mom's face looked that way because she had hit the dashboard when they had the accident. I knew that my dad was lying, and I wanted to know if I could go out and look at the car to see if the car was damaged. So I asked them that. And in the moment that I asked him that, my mom looked at me and she shared a look that I've never forgotten. She shook her head ever so slightly and let me know that I needed to stop talking, to stop asking questions, because I was going to make the situation even worse. And in that moment, I did stop talking. Seeing my mom lying there and my mom being bruised like that was not something new in our home. It had happened with a lot of frequency. So I knew what the truth was. And I did want to speak up for my mom. I wanted to speak up for us. I wanted to be the one in that moment that was going to throw the martini glass against the wall and be angry and express all of that and say, you know what? This has got to stop. This is not okay. But I didn't do that. I couldn't do that. I wanted to keep my mom safe, and I didn't want to make the situation worse. So I chose to stay silent. That feeling of being in a place where you can't stand in your story, where you're told that what you see right before your eyes is not really what's happening, that if you do tell anyone, which is another big part of that, when you grow up in a world like that, you are not allowed to talk about anything that happens in your house outside of the home. And you're threatened by, if you do that, then this will happen. Your dad will leave. We will be left out on the street. You won't be able to go to college, or worse, that someone will be even more deeply harmed in our house. It was a scary time. My dad kept a gun, a revolver, in a drawer, top drawer of his dresser, that was behind his rolled up socks. That was one of my chores, was I had to, when my mom did the laundry, I had to roll up his socks just a certain way and line them up and push them all into the drawer. But you know what, John? I never said a word about that gun. I never talked about it, never spoke about it. I didn't feel that I could. And there were so many nights when I lay awake thinking that I was going to lose my mom to that gun.
That's a lot to have to deal with at 10 years old. Did things get worse or did they get better, Julie, after that?
Things got worse before they got better. We had many, many moments like that growing up. What I'll say is that today I am happily married. I have a wonderful husband who is my biggest cheerleader and supporter. I have three thriving, grown young adult children who know my story, who I've shared my stories with, and we talk about those things. We don't go to bed angry. We say, I love you before you go to bed or before you get off the phone. That's a rule in our house. Oh, gotta say, I love you. Because I believed, when you grow up in a place like that, you learn not to really count on the future. You have to stay in the moment for survival. You learn to not trust other people because you grow up being told that that didn't happen. And if you do tell anyone, they're not going to believe you. And beyond that, the expectations, excuse me, a little water. Pardon me. The expectations for me growing up was that I didn't need to go to college. And I certainly wasn't going to be an actor. That's what I always wanted to be growing up, was I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to tell my story. Being on the stage was the place where I could feel, I could stand in who I was, and I could feel part of a team, part of an ensemble. And it's really where I felt most alive. And I got a little bit of support to do that when I was younger, but not really what I needed to do to get to where I am today. And you just learn to not really believe in yourself, not to believe that your voice matters, not to believe that what you think is possible could really happen. And today, when I work with, from leaders to students and anywhere in between, authors, politicians, writers, CEO, CFO, COOs, it's all for the same reason, is that ability to stand in a room, a small room, or a room of 1,000 people, and to feel that you can be clear, confident, and stand there in your genuine voice and make an impact on an audience, is a powerful thing. And kind of broadening that a little bit out there is that that's my belief, and that why I tell my story, because our stories help us see our shared humanity. When we listen to other people's stories, we see that we are connected. Mm-hmm. And when we share that, when we share the stories, when I share that kind of a story, for a long time, I didn't share those stories publicly. I was ashamed of it. I internalized it. And in a weird way, I started to think that was just sort of, that was a selfish thing. And I was told many times to just get over it. There are so many people who have worse stories than you do. You just need to get over it and move on. And so at some point you realize, you know what? Yep, I do need to move on. And am I over it? I mean, I have very, very many moments, not every day, but I have lots of moments where you stop yourself and you question yourself. And I know now where that's coming from because of the years of personal work and therapy that I've had on my own. But just the daily things that I do to take a breath, to remember who I am, to remember why I'm here, and to really connect with other people, the people that I love, people that support me, and lots of people that I don't know too.
Mm-hmm. I like how you brought up the word genuine, because sometimes people think their stories are not going to be interesting. And there's so many stories of trauma out there. And I can't help but wonder why people feel that way. As long as they are sharing their story, Julie, and then at least saying, you know, I went through this, you know, domestic abuse or betrayal or whatever. And they share stories of, you know, tips. How did they get through it? People love to hear that. Let me ask you this. There's a saying, sometimes your gifts come in crappy wrapping paper. You know, what I'm going to ask you is, did you find any silver lining or any gift? When I say a gift, we are not saying that domestic violence is right. It is not right. But did you get anything good out of your past experiences as a child dealing with that?
I'll use the word that you used, Dawn, which is resilience. I learned to, it's kind of a duality here, that at the same time that I was growing up where my truth wasn't acknowledged, that who I was and really what I wanted to be was devalued, was diminished. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that is that I have such determination to move my story forward. There was something that was in me that said, you know what? You can tell me over and over and over again that what I'm saying is not true and that I won't do this or I won't do that. But there was something in me that I knew. I knew that wasn't true. I knew that there was something better. There was something more. And that determination has stayed with me. I also grew up as a very competitive athlete. So I did learn a lot of the self-discipline that's required for the training and the work ethic to get there. I was a very good student. I worked very hard. It didn't all just sort of come to me, but I learned a lot of self-discipline. Those were places where I could go where nobody would bother me, and I could be out on the basketball court, or I could be swimming in the pool, or I could be running on the track, whatever the sport was that I was doing. And I could be in my own kind of free space. And those are the things that I still take with me today. I became a registered yoga teacher. I became a personal trainer for a while in a, you know, working in a gym and working with people, helping them meet their mental and physical kind of, you know, goals or where they wanted to be. And I still incorporate that into my daily life. That absolutely came from learning that growing up as a child, that you had to be self-disciplined. You had to put in the work. And if you did the work, something good would come of that. And that's what I put into my business too. Because let me tell you, small businesses, the work never stops.
Yeah. Yeah, when you have a small business or entrepreneur, you find out real quickly, you know, what you're good at, what you're not good at. So you learned a lot from the experience. What I'm hearing you say is that you learned a lot about resilience, and now you've taken that into everyday life, your personal, probably your work and all. And do you feel like those experiences that you went through as a child, that you're able to take that, those experiences, and still help your customers, your clients?
Absolutely. When I, you know, when I share those stories, or when I'm working with someone who has come to me, because people come to me and they share stories, they'll say, I'm really self-conscious. Sometimes it's about their physical appearance. Sometimes it's just, they have this, this very high stakes moment coming up and they don't want to mess it up. They don't want to look foolish in front of their team. They're supposed to be accomplished in some way. They're supposed to be at a certain place in their career. Other people see them in a way and they don't want anyone to think badly of them or think that they're not qualified or they're not really the expert that they pretend to be. And so what I like to get people talking about, first of all, is you have to make a choice. You have to say, when you step into that moment, to say, you know what? Whatever is on the other side of my fear matters more than the thing that's holding me back. So occasionally people do share very personal stories about themselves and their own struggles. And again, not therapy, but deeply therapeutic. And I'm a place where they just kind of get it out there. And I say, okay, so now what are we going to do here? Let's take that story and let's reframe that. Let's put those in the positive, into a positive way that you can move forward. Now that's different than just saying, oh, that doesn't matter. Let go of that. That's not okay. I never do that because I understand what that meant when that happened to me, to ignore those stories that really are holding you back. So you talk through that first. And then what you do, something I love to do with people, is to say, okay, so think of who your best friend is, your biggest champion, that person who, if they were sitting right next to you, what would they be saying to you as you're thinking about going into this opportunity, this big keynote address, this meeting, this presentation, this interview, whatever that moment is, what would that person be saying to you? And let me hear what they would say. And that's often where the shift happens. Because we do have those voices within us. We have, hopefully everyone has one of those voices around them. And we also have those within us. We can turn to that voice of our inner champion, of our best friend, that says, hey, Julie, you know what? I know you went through a lot of junk there. And this moment that you're coming to, you're getting on this radio show with Dawn. She's super cool, super easy to talk to. You might be nervous, but just go tell your story. It'll be a great conversation. You got this.
And you do have this. And I like how you talk about the champion voice in your head, because I want to talk about the gremlin in your head. And let me explain that to you, Julie. When I was in coaching school, IPAC, I remember them talking about the gremlin in your head, the gremlin being the opposite. That's the voice in your head telling you you're not good enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not smart enough, whatever it is. It's that inner critic. How do you silence that?
So I use that exact thing, that inner critic, because I come from the world of the stage. So I've been on stage with a lot of real critics in the first or second row of the theater. And I will tell you, the inner critics we have in our head are way more intimidating than anyone who's sitting in the front row taking notes on your performance. So the way I approach the inner critic is I always say, let them have their voice. I have a whole fun exercise that I do where you actually give your inner, you can give your inner critic a name. My inner critic's name is Wanda.
Oh, Wanda.
I don't know why, it just kind of came to me one day. And you can go as far as making a whole persona. You can walk around like Wanda if you want to. You don't have to do it in front of anyone, but you can sort of imagine who that character is. And what they say to you, let her have her say about whatever, like you just mentioned, the gremlin that you have, which I kind of like that because it's like a little, I have a picture of a little, maybe a little monster that isn't really so scary. But yeah, so let them say it. And then you say, okay, you know what? You're not coming with me today. You know who I am going to take with me? For me, what I do is I take that 10-year-old. I take that adorable, spunky, smart, wonderful, full of life 10-year-old who wasn't always acknowledged back then. And I say, you know what? You're coming with me. We're going to go do this together. I got you. I need your energy. I need your genuine, thoughtful, smart, bright mind. And I want you coming with me. Let's go do this together. And even just as I'm saying that, like, I feel my eyes brighten, my smile comes back to my face. And I feel like, you know what? I do have everything in me to go do this. Mm-hmm. That's one thing you can do.
Julie, you brought up about the tools, and I've always been taught we all have the tools within us, but sometimes people don't know that. How do they find the tools within them? And that's a pretty broad question.
Mm-hmm. You know, finding those tools within you, I mean, part of that is you may need to go talk to a therapist. You may need to find someone who it can give you the time and the energy and the way to move forward through that. So this is a yes and moment. The world of improv is always, well, do that, but don't do this. So this is a yes and. Ask yourself, again, who are the people in your life? And sometimes you can put this in kind of like a Venn diagram. It's a little bit of an exercise that I do, where you think of, who's somebody that knows you really, really well? That might be your best friend. It might be a spouse. It might be a sibling. Might be a parent who knows you very well. And you write down those things that that person would say about you. Three things. And then you take a look at someone who is, you would consider to be a colleague or a teammate, someone who you have kind of a collegial relationship with. If you were to leave the room, and they were to come in the room and I were to say, hey, what would you say about Dawn if she wasn't here? What are the three qualities that would describe her? You write those down. Then you think of a mentor. Excuse me, I'm going to go back. Sorry. Then you think of your boss, someone who was a manager, someone who was a leader above you. Write down those three qualities. You put those on the, put that on the piece of paper. Then you start to have kind of a montage of people who you've known in very different ways. Someone who knows you well, someone who you've worked with, and maybe a boss who you've had, a manager. And then the last thing you do is you think of your a real mentor or champion in your life. Someone who believes that you can do the things that you've never even thought you could imagine. And what you do with that person is you write down the three qualities about them, about that person. Put those in there too. And the reason we do that, and I believe that it works, is that we choose our mentors, we choose our champions, because that's the person that we perhaps aspire to be, that sees something in us. And when you put all of that together, you recognize that those qualities that you are using to describe your mentor or your champion are very likely already within you. They just maybe haven't come out, or maybe you don't see them yet.
And that makes sense. Is there anyone that stands out for you, a mentor or two? It's you.
One of my strongest mentors was actually a basketball coach that I had when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. And I was a very, very good basketball player in high school. I have to toot my own horn here. I worked very hard at it. I had an 85% free throw percentage, Dawn, as a basketball player.
I loved playing basketball. Yes.
Because I practiced a lot. You got to practice those free throws. You got to practice them. Yeah. Anyway, and when I went to him my senior year, and because he was working on getting me recruited to play in college, and I said to him, my heart's just not in it. I don't want to do it anymore. A big part of that was because after I played basketball games, I would go home and my dad would go through all the things that I did wrong. And I just sort of sucked the fun out of all of it. Mm-hmm. But when I said to him, I want to be an actor. It's really what I want to do. And he started crying.
Aw. Yeah. Julie, we said,